It's Illinois Edition. I'm Brian Mackey. The use of solitary confinement has drawn increasing scrutiny nationwide. And last week, the John Howard Association issued a statement on the practice in Illinois prisons. John Howard, or the JHA, is an independent watchdog monitoring conditions and advocating for more humane treatment in Illinois prisons. Joining us is Jennifer Volenkatz, director of the JHA. Jenny, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Brian. I appreciate your having me on.
So how many inmates are in solitary in Illinois?
At any given time, we have over 2,000 inmates in isolation. And it's important to note that isolation can be different things to different people at different times. And that's, you know, one of the things that I think is important in the discussion of use of isolation in incarceration is to define our terms consistently so that when we are talking about it, we are all talking about the same things.
How do you define solitary, right? There are international definitions, there are national definitions. Does Illinois have a definition? And what is your definition?
So the definition that we are using, which seems to be the most widely adopted definition as far as we can tell, based on both the United Nations and the United States Department of Justice use of it, is that isolation is the confinement to a cell for more than 22 hours a day. That can occur for many reasons. A good example is someone may not technically be in isolation, but may spend 22 hours a day in their cell because the whole facility is on lockdown, or because they are at a reception and classification facility coming into the system where programming and treatment and services are a bit different because it's a temporary place until reception and classification determines where a particular inmate will be designated. And so, in-cell time there may look very different than it could other places. So that's why understanding there are so many different permutations and ways in which someone may be in their cell for prolonged periods of time, it's important that we define our terms so that we're all talking about the same thing in any given conversation.
Yeah, I think most people, when they think about solitary, they think of it, there's that famous scene in the movie Cool Hand Luke, right? Any man does this wrong, spends a night in the box. Anyone does that wrong, spends a night in the box.
Them clothes got laundry numbers on them. You remember your number and always wear the ones that has your number. Any man forgets his number, spends a night in the box. These here spoons you keep with you. Any man loses his spoon, spends a night in the box. There's no plain grab or fighting in the building. You got a grudge against another man, you fight him Saturday afternoon. Any man playing grab or fighting in the building spends a night in the box. First bell is at 8:05 when you will get in your box. Last bell is at 8:00. Any man not in his bunk at 8:00 spends a night in the box. There's no smoking in the prone position in bed. To smoke, you must have both legs over the side of your bunk. Any man caught smoking in the prone position in bed spends a night in the box. You get 2 sheets every Saturday. You put the clean sheet in the top sheet in the bottom sheet you turn in the laundry boy. Any man turns in the wrong sheet spends a night in the box.
Which?
No one will sit in the bunks with dirty pants on. Any man with dirty pants on sitting on a bunk spends a night in the box. Any man don't bring back his empty pop bottle spends a night in the box. Any man loud talking spends a night in the box. You got questions? You come to me. I'm Carr, the floor walker. I'm responsible for order in here. Any man don't keep order spends a night in the box.
They think that it's some sort of special punishment, but what you're saying is this can be solitary-like conditions, even if not, you know, technically in solitary, can be much more widespread than people might think.
That's exactly right. And let me be clear, that certainly doesn't make it okay. We're not advocating that that's an appropriate use of it. We're just explaining that there are different ways in which someone can be isolated and for different reasons. Sometimes it's disciplinary. Sometimes it's what they call administrative segregation. Other times it could be protective custody. So it has a lot of different labels, but nonetheless, 22 hours in a cell with no programming or maybe with some programming, really depending on the institution and the situation, is isolation and a problem, you know, regardless of the label it's been given by a particular institution or Department of Corrections.
Now, so, okay, people in reception and classification, presumably that would end once they're assigned to a different prison and there are going to be lockdowns for times. Are there inmates in Illinois who have been in solitary for months and months and months, potentially even years and years?
Oh, yes, absolutely. That's the case.
What sort of circumstances does Illinois put an inmate in solitary for such an extended period of time?
So there are many different situations that could land somebody in segregation or what we call isolation for a prolonged period of time, many of which I just outlined. And you also have to bear in mind that each facility may be doing it for slightly different reasons. So it's hard to categorically say what they're all in for, but it could be because there's a pending investigation and they are presumed involved in a particular incident. Might have been a violent incident. Could be protective custody, that it's for their own good because there's something about this individual. Maybe they're a snitch. Maybe they were part of a gang. Maybe there is something about them that other inmates have an issue with that puts them in a particularly vulnerable position. Maybe it's an act of violence that they committed independently themselves. Maybe it's because they're viewed as a risk to themselves, that they have threatened to self-harm. So there's so many different circumstances at this time that a facility could use to put somebody in isolation.
Is there a condition under which solitary is justified, isolation is justified?
So that's a very good question, and it's obviously something we wrestle with here at the John Howard Association, because isolation by its very nature is really dehumanizing, and we know that it very much compromises the mental health of the inmates subjected to it. On the other hand, we're also well aware of the complexity of correctional operations. And what I would say is there are certainly times that somebody needs to be separated and kept someplace where they might be confined and where they might need to be observed in order to ensure that they don't harm themselves or somebody else. But we believe that those circumstances are very limited, far more limited than we're currently experiencing in Illinois or most other states. But the really important piece is that whatever rules we have around it need to be universal and consistent and take into account that prolonged isolation is inevitably detrimental and, you know, negatively impactful of everybody, both those who experience it, those who inflict it, and the communities to which these people return.
It's Illinois Edition. I'm Brian Mackey. We are speaking with Jennifer Volenkatz. She's the director of the John Howard Association. We're talking about the use of isolation, solitary confinement in Illinois prisons. What sort of changes would you like to see to practices and potentially even the law in Illinois?
First of all, we'd like to see Illinois increase the minimum out-of-cell standards and positive activity for every inmate. That's critical. And it is also important that we move inmates out of restrictive statuses efficiently, meaning as quickly and productively as possible. This is very difficult to do right now because we rely so heavily on isolation as a tool because of overcrowding. So sometimes it is the only way to get somebody out of a double-celled situation. So we need to attend to a lot of other issues to make new isolation policies implementable. But in raising minimum standards of out-of-cell time and increasing rehabilitative opportunities, we're going to allow for the possibility of additional, more positive behavior management tools to be used. Things like restricting privileges that we really can't do under current circumstances. And those things will be able to take the place of using isolation as sort of the one blunt instrument we have to deal with every behavioral infraction. And the other thing we'd like to see happen that would make a big difference is to not only increase out-of-cell time for everybody, but to very judiciously determine the circumstances where isolation is appropriate, and understanding that things must be proportional. So if an inmate is getting the same number of days in isolation, for the example we use in our statement is having too many envelopes in their cell, and if that punishment is quite similar or the same as somebody who has physically hurt another individual, staff or inmate, caused grave bodily harm, even death, if those things are meeting out, coming out as similar punishments, we have a problem. You know, punishment needs to be, we know, swift, certain, and proportional in order to be impactful. And the use of isolation should be, you know, almost always a last resort. And in that, you know, it should take into consideration what it's being inflicted for, what the punishment is being handed out for, what was the action, how harmful was it, before it's ever used.
That really does remind me of that scene in Cool Hand Luke, right? Where some, no matter what you do wrong, fighting, to having inappropriate. What did you say? Number of envelopes in your cell results in isolation. Is that's a common practice in Illinois?
Exactly. It is. And it may, I mean, it is, like I said, right now, the Department of Corrections doesn't have that many tools at its disposal, and that needs to change. It's sort of like the idea that if the only tool you have is a hammer, all your problems become nails. I think that that's what's happened, unfortunately, and it shouldn't be like that. We should be able to look at each case individually. You know, if there is punishment necessary based on the infraction, it should be swift, certain, and proportionate. It should be in response to the violation. And for the only punishment to be available is isolation is ineffective and inappropriate and very much dehumanizing. One thing that I would like to point out is that in changing the policies, it's very important that we, first of all, take into consideration things that need to be changed, both in terms of isolation policy and good correctional operations in general. We need to make sure that we are working to reduce our population and reduce overcrowding, that we are appropriately staffing our correctional agency, that there is increased training, that there are assessment tools available to help determine the individual needs of each inmate, which will help us determine what behavior is truly problematic and how we can help that individual to avoid that kind of behavior or work through that kind of behavior when it occurs in a more rehabilitative and productive way. But what I would say is we must also use our common sense and adhere to basic principles of human treatment when it comes to this kind of policy, which means really reducing the number of people that are subjected to isolation purposefully or unintentionally due to constraints that we already have in our system. And we must also make sure that policies that we create now are uniform and consider levels of violation before being triggered.
Okay, well, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us.
Thank you, Brian. I appreciate it.
Jennifer Vollenkatz is director of the John Howard Association. I'm Brian Mackey.